So it is just 11 o'clock. Unless anybody has an issue, we will call the special audit finance committee meeting to order. And in accordance with state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded and the recording will be posted on the authority's website. We need to do a roll call of the committee members, please. So, Mike?
Present, Mike Angelini.
Daryl Hill?
Present.
Peter Lisi?
Present.
And obviously Susan Martin, I'm here. So all board members that were expected are in attendance, and a roll call of the staff. Jeanette Weldon?
Yes, I am here.
Denise?
Here.
Rob Blake?
Here.
Joanne?
Matthew? I'm here. Hello.
Mike Morris?
I'm here.
Cynthia Peoples?
I'm present.
Julia?
Present.
And Kara Stewart?
Present.
I guess I'm supposed to remind everybody that during the meeting, before speaking, state your name and title. And all votes will be taken by a roll call unless the vote is unanimous. In the event that the meeting is interrupted due to technical difficulties, members and staff will receive a text or email advising whether the meeting is adjourned or canceled, or the time the meeting will resume. With that, the first order of business on today's agenda is approval of the minutes from the February 16, 2022 meeting. Can I have a motion to accept those minutes?
It's Mike Angelini. Make that motion.
Yeah, I'll second it.
You will second it. Thank you. Any discussion, revisions, comments? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed or abstaining? Okay, minutes are approved. The next item on our agenda is an internal audit update, and I'm going to turn that over to Cynthia.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to pretty much run all the agenda items through the same presentation today, so I'm going to start sharing my screen. So that we can get started. All right, can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
Yes.
Good.
I must say, Cynthia,
okay. What's that?
Nothing, go ahead.
Peter, were you gonna say I look pretty high tech?
No, if she goes back to that first page, I was gonna say the background looks a little bit like a golf ball, which puts my mind somewhere else immediately.
You're right.
Or a genetic sequence.
That's far too intellectual for me.
Peter, are you sure you needed a slide to take your mind to that place?
You're right, Mike. I didn't.
It's going to be a long afternoon then, because we have several hours here gathered together.
Yeah.
Okay, right, go ahead, Cynthia. Sorry about that.
I'll try to make this as quick as I can for the meeting. Rob is also, given that he's the man behind the screen, as far as the IT closet is concerned, he's also a part of this presentation because we work collectively to, gather the resources that I've put together for the presentation and the memos and that type of thing. So just like I said, I was going to run everything through the same presentation. So the internal audit update is the first item on the agenda. It's information only. The strategic plan that we've put together also is information only. And then the scope for the internal audit RFP is something that you do have to act on. Back in 2018, the committee had asked that this scope be something that they review before we insert it into the RFP. So I've provided that for you here today as well. So starting with the internal audit update, just to be clear on, what Barry Dunn did versus what Crowe did for us. Barry Dunn, of course, is our internal auditor. And in the course of their doing their regular business, they did internal audit of information technology on our behalf. And they came up with 12 recommendations for us. So I've listed those there. On this slide, we have the medium risk ratings and the low risk rating items. I've highlighted a few of them there because the disaster recovery planning, risk assessment, written information security program, as well as the incident response procedures were something that we then RFP'd for so that we could get a consultant to come in and assist with the development of those items. So we asked Crow to provide us guidance on our disaster recovery planning, and the deliverables were a risk assessment and also to assist us with setting up a template or a program so that it could be done annually. They delivered an information security program and incident response procedures. Now, further in the documentation, if you read the memo, also you'll see that those two things are still in progress because all of them require a multitude of procedures in support of each of those two items that we're still inventorying and then making sure that we have put in place. Anyone have any questions about the difference between what Barry Dunn has done for us and what Crow did?
Cynthia, I don't have any questions. I just want to say I appreciate you drawing the distinctions. I went through the meeting materials. I very honestly, I'll admit, I was a little confused or unsure as to what the specific the charter was for each one of these different groups. So I appreciate this clears it up for me. So thank you.
Wonderful, thank you. All right, so some of the implemented initiatives that we have, and I kind of label these more like operations type of initiatives. So the annual cybersecurity training is something that is complete. Last year, we used our resources with our cybersecurity insurance provider to provide the training for staff, and that happened in the spring last year. We've now changed our provider to Tokyo Marine HCC, and they also have a platform of cybersecurity training resources that we're actually going to start doing the training for next week. And the reason for that, or not next week, but in about 2 weeks, I think it is. Actually, I think it is next week, because we want to make sure that we have all of our staff in place. So given that we're filling a vacant position, once that position starts, we'll have everyone on staff, and then we can start the training. Their videos are definitely distinctly different than what Beasley had for us, which will be great not to have to repeat the same training year after year there. So very excited about having a new platform for that training. The cybersecurity IT strategic plan is what we're doing today, our next agenda item. The risk assessment, which was performed by Crow, is also complete. We had onboarding and offboarding checklists that Barry Dunn had asked us to implement, and we did that way back in 2020. We have a laptop shared account in the boardroom that we use for all our presentations, and the request there was essentially, let's do something different with it because it's got a published, and I don't mean published as in, everyone knows what the username and password is, but internally we do, and we don't change it often. So that we can just continue with smooth operations in that area, because if we were to change it and then, someone here wasn't around that remembered it and that type of thing. But we're satisfied with how that is structured because that laptop only has very limited access to the network, primarily one folder that we drop things into. So we feel it's secure. The SOC report review is also underway. We've got our procedures in place. We've been collecting them. We've been reviewing them, and we're moving forward with that, trying to improve and tweak some of the procedures as we train and do that. But for the most part, it is complete. And I'll turn this over to Rob for the next couple of slides.
Yeah. So we're going to go over our implemented initiatives from an infrastructure perspective. So Crow came in and they also did a vulnerability scan, which identified several vulnerabilities that need to be patched, which we patched immediately. Based on that vulnerability scan as well, there were 9 end-of-life operating systems. Of those 9, we have removed 4 of those out of our environment. By over the next 2 months or so, we're going to have an additional 3. Ultimately, there will be 1 virtual machine left of those 9, which encompasses our legacy accounting system, which we have to keep. So we will end up with 1 of those 9 2008 R2 operating systems. We, as well as that, we've done a phishing campaign. We did it this month, which we send out to all staff. Those that were phished or, you know, got caught clicking the wrong link or opening the improper attachment had some follow-up training that they had to complete, which we also saved and, you know, are keeping track of. And we're going to continue to do that moving forward. Starting in the month of June, we're going to be doing our second failover test. We did one last June where we took our entire environment in Connecticut and failed over to Parsippany, New Jersey, all of our file servers and our virtual desktop environment, and was able to test our business continuity from a failover perspective. So that's going to be scheduled for next month. One more to touch on the previous topic on phishing. We're going to be continuing our phishing campaign, on a schedule, which I'll talk about on the next slide, that we are getting through our current insurance provider, which is Tokio Marine, that Cynthia mentioned earlier. In regards to our failover testing, we also are doing file restores quarterly. We've done two so far, which we've pulled a backup from tape, from disk. So we're keeping that on a reoccurring schedule. That's also a requirement for one of our cybersecurity insurance providers, is they want to kind of see that we're doing that regularly. And we have that on a set schedule. So we've already done two successfully. In regards to our administrative passwords, Cynthia and I have two domain admin accounts, and we have implemented Cisco Duo to make sure that we have multi-factor authentication to our core infrastructure. So in other words, when we go to log in, we have to use another app to make sure that we can actually authenticate and do what we need to do for our privileged accounts. And we have two of those. Next slide, please, Cynthia. So this is our infrastructure scheduling. And basically, a lot of what's on this color-coded calendar here are things that are done, but also a roadmap for us to continue to stay current on things like patching, our phishing campaign, like I talked about, the cybersecurity awareness training that Cynthia just previously mentioned. And it is a calendar that we have for all of fiscal 2022. And I believe we're going to be starting that, you know, updating some for 2023 as well. So we have pretty much a calendar for everything moving forward from an infrastructure perspective.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah.
So this is where we landed. We of all the initiatives that we had created, and in the memo, I did talk about the fact that we had 12 recommendations from Barry Dunn and 12 from Crow. Each of those, in some cases, not all of them, but some of them had a couple of tasks that needed to be accomplished in each one of them. So I kind of broke out every single one of the initiatives from those recommendations. I lined them up next to each other. I said, these were only by Crow, these were only by Barry Dunn, and here are the ones that overlap. And that's what I presented to you in the memo related to the internal audit updates. This page in particular is part of the attachment to that memo. And here I've highlighted strictly the ones that have not been completed. And these are the ones that essentially get exported and then imported into our strategic planning that we did. The remaining ones that are either in, you know, various stages of progress, planning in progress, started, and requires, you know, outsourcing. And so that gets addressed in the strategic planning component. Does anyone have any question about the internal audit updates related to IT?
Cynthia, this is Peter. You know, I've got a lot of questions, but primarily because it's my own ignorance of this field. But I won't bore you with all those. But could you just quickly explain to me, under configuration management, what is security hardening review?
And I will let Rob, okay. Explain that one to you.
You want me to take that one?
Actually, well, I will definitely, but he was also going to explain that a little bit further on. So Rob, I don't know if you want to table it until we get into the strategic planning portion of it.
Sure.
So we did discuss that earlier, and we know it's something that we were going to discuss, you know, based on the strategic planning memo. So if you don't mind, we can table that, and then he can go into it a little bit further in depth.
Yep, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from anyone? All right, wonderful. So that completes that portion. I can move on to the strategic planning that we put together as well. And interrupt at any time if you have any questions, we're willing to stop and address them. So one of the first things we did was try and come up with business objectives for IT so that we could kind of group the direction we're trying to go with the infrastructure itself and with operations associated with IT as well. So communications, portability, accessibility, and secure infrastructure were the ones that we came up with and agreed upon. And in particular, communications, it's literally, you know, continuity, collaboration, internal and external, our client services, and, you know, internal communications as well. And in particular, internal and external communications are our move from our Avaya phone system to WebEx, which we did at the end of January, beginning of February. That's one of the ways that would have been, you know, if we weren't doing this presentation today, we did it 6 months ago, that would have been one of the things on our roadmap for our strategy would be to make that move to a cloud-based phone system because we had passed the end of life for our prior system. So portability, again, it's, you know, what we're doing now. A portion of that is what we're doing now. Some of the cloud service offerings that enter the, you know, our infrastructure, just the ability to increase our productivity, integrate systems. So knowledge from one system is transferred to another system for reporting or integration with whatever, you know, might be the case. Accessibility, again, more of what we're doing now. There's definitely overlap in some of these. Just making sure we have compatible technology for continuity between, you know, internally, between, you know, staff, and that our systems can continue to be integrated seamlessly. And then secure infrastructure, it's what we're really talking about a lot here, why we have these risk assessments and try to make sure that our infrastructure is stable and, you know, we're aware and prepared for any type of alerts or anything that comes through. So resiliency, enhanced visibility into our system, more reporting, and that type of thing as well. So we took these business objectives and used it to look at the initiatives that we had and then produce a diagram that could essentially provide us, you know, that roadmap that we need to satisfy the recommendations, to also take a look at not just those short-term items, but the mid and the long-term. So we captured and defined our business objectives. We incorporated our risk universe areas. So Crow had introduced risk universe areas to us that we also incorporated into the strategic planning process to make sure that, you know, and there's overlap between our business objectives, but to make sure that we were properly categorizing those risk areas into our business objectives. We took an inventory of our resources and our capabilities, which is also outlined in the diagram. And again, we have short, mid, and long-term initiatives that are outlined. And then we have the implementation roadmap so that we could see, okay, this comes first, this comes next, which quarter are we going to address this, when are we going to complete this, that type of thing. And then we began to identify some of our key dependencies and risks. And the metrics, KPIs, even ultimately K risk indicators, KRIs, that we could potentially, you know, face as we try to address these initiatives. So I did give a little roadmap in and kind of decoded the strategic planning diagram that was included. For me, I'm lucky because I can print it out on a nice 11 by 14 page to be able to read it a little bit better. But what I'm doing next is just kind of showing you what our initiatives are and what the roadmap is for those initiatives. And so under operations, we have website security exposure. So we've also run some scans that were available to us. Now, there are plenty of people who are phishing for business who will run these scans and then send emails to us. But we used Tokio Marine and had them put us now on a monthly schedule to run these scans of our public-facing websites so that we can see what kind of cybersecurity exposure that we might have. And then again, go down the list and say, okay, this is a high priority, this is a low priority, this needs to be resolved. Yeah, we can live with that. It's not really a security risk and that type of thing. So it's really going to be an ongoing thing as our websites take shape. We're constantly adding pages and sometimes microsites and things like that. But we're primarily focusing on that now since then going forward straight through the beginning of 2023. The business impact analysis and the strategic, and then the disaster recovery, which is the business continuity planning, those have essentially fallen under our planning status, primarily because there are things that have been higher priority. And the impact analysis itself involves each and every critical function, identifying each of those critical functions so that we make sure that we have a plan, we know our resources, and we know, you know, exactly what we need to do in case of whatever risk that might happen. And then for the business continuity plan, it's another one of those things where we need to make sure our resources are available to us, preferably in a cloud off-premise environment, and to incorporate the results of the business impact analysis, incorporate the change in our infrastructure, incorporate the cloud-based services or offerings that we now take advantage of. And those things we haven't had a chance to, you know, put together in writing. So that's where we're going with addressing those items.
Cynthia, I have a question, and I have to admit, like Peter, I had to read the material through a couple of times, and this is not my area of expertise by any means. I'm not, you know, and I don't know how much expertise anybody on the committee has, frankly, but on the website security exposure, is that somebody corrupting the websites? Or if they do get in there and do something to the website, is that going to impact the business operations of Chifa, or are they unrelated?
No, it would not. The websites are all on separate servers. They have the separate security structure. They're outside of our network, internal network infrastructure. They probably could wreak some havoc. But for the most part, it's finding, you know, if there are any of our passwords that are sitting in the dark web, or Rob might remember some of the results that ended up in the report, but I don't think any of them were high risk exposure things that we needed to resolve at all. Rob, do you want to comment at all?
Yeah, no. So usually scans like this, they'll do things like they'll look at an organization, they'll say, you know, does Chifa own Chifa.net, Chifa.com, Chifa.ro? So how many domains does Chifa own? Are there any outdated SSL certificates? For example, when you go to a website and you don't see that lock, are there any publicly known port numbers open? You know, that's some of those kind of things that would show up. But to Cynthia's point, our web servers are completely isolated from our internal network. They would only be able to see anything that sits in that container. And we don't tend to store anything on our web servers that's not publicly available. So they would really be accessing something they could see on the website. But we don't have the report wasn't a bad report. It was just things that are recommendations. But overall, it was a really good report, I think.
Thank you. So that's kind of what I thought in my layman terms. But
it's a good question.
So it seems to me then that the business impact piece of it, disaster recovery, contingency plans, would have a higher priority, right? Because if there's anything that happens there, Chifa can't operate. So is there a reason focusing on the website security sooner than some of the other stuff that seems to have a higher risk?
Different resources and different priorities. So the website security exposure is being done by a different staff person entirely. We do have a business continuity plan. Rob has procedures in place for our recovery based on our current infrastructure. It just hasn't been incorporated in the documentation. So it's a matter of pulling all those pieces together and putting them in the same place, and not necessarily that we don't have a plan for recovery based on our new network architecture. We did the failover last year that Rob alluded to, and we plan on doing it again this year. It's a matter of just updating paperwork
Okay, so if there was a ransomware, if there was a ransomware attack and they locked down the systems that you all use every day to operate, you have a backup plan that you'd be able to continue to operate. You just haven't written it all in one doc.
Put it in writing.
Okay.
That's kind of what that is. What I will say, though, is in the business impact analysis, some portions of that will probably start sooner because it does require staff to really take a look at their critical functions and outline those critical functions so that we can compile it all together. That's probably more critical than the, you know, plan document itself, other than making sure those resources for the plan document are available to others. But the impact analysis is, you know, what do we do if the system's down and we can't get the mailing out? things like that. So what are your critical functions and what is the failover for those critical functions? And being aware of your critical functions for completion. So that is really more important probably than making sure that we have, you know, 100% inclusively included, you know, all these procedures into the business continuity plan itself. And identifying the business impact is really more critical than a lot of the other portions of it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we've also identified in the process those items that we want to or need to use or go and do in partnership with a technology consultant. Penetration testing is one of those things that we've had our eye on since Barry Dunn mentioned that yes, we should be doing penetration testing. And in consultation with our current technology consultant, they've recommended that it kind of get pushed to the end. So once we get vulnerability management in place, once we get some of these other initiatives in place and up and running, then it would happen on the tail end of that, rather than doing it first. We've already had the risk assessment. We've already had the audit, penetration testing could identify some of the same things we already know that we're working on. So the idea is to make sure that we get these things in place. We come back to the penetration testing, see if there's any holes. And if there are holes, then we would, you know, make sure that we clean up whatever those things might be. So that's one consultant. And even though we might want to be in partnership for some of the other items I have listed on this page, they clearly could not also do penetration testing for us. So it requires two separate consultants in that regard. So starting from the top, we've had in our minds and in our regular authority strategic plan a client portal, which we are closer to working toward the development of and creation of. So that's been listed. It's not necessarily one of those recommendations that was provided to us by Crow or Barry Dunn, but it is highly dependent on technology. So we've added that in here as well. And then information security reporting, the vulnerability management, and the SIM solution. Those are things that we intend to work with our current technology consultant to assist us in developing a plan to address those items. So the vulnerability management includes those assessments. It includes the scans that they would do for us, and they've recommended quarterly rather than monthly. And that is so that if there are, you know, two or three or four or five items that get identified, you have the opportunity to actually do the remediation for those before you do the next scan, in deference to the fact that, you know, there are other things that you are doing at the same time. We would meet with them monthly to go over these reports so that we know what we have to address and what needs to be addressed and the priority of doing those items. And the SIM solution is another one of those items that was recommended. And that essentially is, it's a security information and event management. So it's really a solution that layers on top a lot of your hardware and software logging that brings all of it together inclusively so that you have it all in one place. So kind of manages, you know, what information is coming from hardware logs, what information might be coming from the state of our software. And it kind of compiles it all into one so that we can address, you know, here's this nice pretty list of all those things that we found throughout your network based on the logs and the reporting that comes from the variety of solutions that you have. So it can tie into all of those and, you know, be one report that we can address. And that, again, is something that we would discuss with our technology consultants in a partnership with them on a monthly basis. The information security reporting, that in particular was the idea that doing what we're doing now, or doing what I did when I did the internal audit update, probably, I don't know if it was 6 months or a year ago around this time, it's basically taking a look at our entire threat landscape, all those key risk indicators, and, you know, what is our status, or what state are we in now? Where are we in, you know, our security, our cybersecurity, our infrastructure, stability, and then addressing any of those key risk indicators and reporting out to the board. So we're hoping to dedicate one meeting a year specifically to that reporting. And my preference would be to do it in the November timeframe, because the dust kind of settles on a whole lot of other things between budgeting and audit and that type of thing. So hopefully we'll be able to come back to you each November. And in conjunction with our partnership with our technology consultant, we would collectively do a presentation to you of where we are with our infrastructure and our security initiatives and that type of thing. Anyone have any questions on these? That would be collectively done with the partnership. At the bottom of the slide, I also include what was in the memo would be what we would have in the budget for each of these initiatives.
I had another question, and again, it might be my ignorance, but as we move to more cloud-hosted software solutions, doesn't that, like, the vulnerability management and penetration testing and all that, isn't there less work in that area because the software and everything is cloud-based, hosted, so it all that stuff is already done by the host?
Not necessarily. There is some level of that. One of the things that actually Rob was going to talk about it on the next slide is what we've done and some of the initiatives that we've put into place prior to going out to bid with our consultant for our cybersecurity insurance this time. And it is a move to a lot of cloud-based offerings, but it's also what are you doing when people are connecting to these cloud-based offerings? We still have to put the lock on the door for those services. So Rob will speak to that a little bit more on the next slide as well, and what we're doing to make sure that that is also secure. Have any other questions on these portions? Okay. I'm going to turn it over. Oh, Peter, did you have something?
No, I say no. No question for me.
Okay. All right. I'm going to turn it back over to Rob for infrastructure.
Yep. Before we get started on the slide, it's really, when you think about hardware, you think about all the tools you need to police it. Unfortunately, they're taking all that hardware and they're making it software, and you still got to manage it. And the same providers that would have a tool you would use on-premise, they come with a cloud-based tool, and it's not usually included. It still requires some of that tender loving care, which I'll touch on in the security hardening piece. So here we are with some of our outstanding initiatives for infrastructure. One of the recommendations was to bring in a ticketing system for us to kind of monitor change controls when we're making changes to our firewall, if we're making changes to someone that needs access to something, a wide variety of changes. We have a process in place. We do keep track of logs, and that and we also have a process internally of getting the proper approvals from management when an auditor does come in and say, well, how did such and such get access to X, Y, and Z? We have that paper trail and we save that properly. They did recommend a ticketing system. We have started the planning phase of looking into something that's open source and secure. Free, because there are a lot of great free tools out there, rather than going out and spending a tremendous amount of money on a tool that may have features that we really don't need based on the size of our organization. So that's for that line item. And as you can see on the right side, the roadmap. The security hardening review touches on Peter's question, and it also really touches on the question of, you know, if a lot of items are in the cloud, you know, do we really need, you know, some of these tools to continue to aggregate and keep us on our toes for ransomware and kind of the anomalies that happen in the cloud or on-prem. And you know, when we do a security hardening review, that's when we would update for something that's a physical hardware, or let's say in the cloud. We are an Office 365 tenant in a hybrid configuration. So we have some hardware in Connecticut. We have our DR site in Jersey, and we're, you know, we have data in the cloud. And Microsoft, for example, will give us a security score monthly. And recently we, based on the score, to increase our score, we implemented multi-factor authentication for all of our cloud logins, as well as just logging into applications like Outlook internally. And to make sure that we stay current based on their security recommendations. Also, that implementation was a requirement and is a requirement for pretty much any cybersecurity insurance company on the planet right the second. So it really includes continuing to keep all the changes that happen on the network current, and keeping that audit trail as well, to kind of stay up to date with some of the best practices and the vulnerabilities based on you know, the new versions that come out. We have it's constantly a moving target. As you can see to the right, the cloud, it just keeps going out to infinity, because a vulnerability that you would think just would happen internally, it can happen in the cloud. And, you know, sometimes it's automatic and sometimes it's not, unfortunately. So we're constantly working on that. And multi-factor has been helping us with that as well. That's something that we recently implemented. Incident response plan. Cynthia and I, we meet every Thursday. We are in the process of, and this is in progress, of creating a lot of documentation based on the recommendations of the Pro Audit. We had a lot of that documentation, but they want us to also document, you know, other areas of the infrastructure that are very important in a different fashion, right? A different kind of template. So we're continuing to create that documentation that we can, you know, we're versioning, and we're, you know, turning drafts into final, and that's just, it's a lot of documentation, but we're definitely making great progress on that. As far as the user access review, which is right under the incident response program, that is related to, you know, pretty much breaking down the users that we have internally based on a business unit. And if this particular person is in this business unit, you know, where do they have access to other areas on the network, you know, file shares, et cetera, reporting on that. That's something that's in progress, and we have a tool already internally that we're using to continue to do that on a frequent basis. And that helps us with, you know, things like least privilege access. So someone not having access to like the HR directory, you know, if someone accesses something that they shouldn't, we're going to know about it. So, you know, it's not always just ransomware. Sometimes, you know, people get added to the wrong group, and we're able to get a reporting on that and make sure that people that have access to what they should have access to do, and those that don't, we actually have awareness on that. So
I want to just add something there as well. One of the key tenets on user access is also making sure that people don't just randomly have access across the network.
Correct.
When a virus actually comes into a network, if it comes in through someone who has wide access to multiple directories, it will take advantage of all the access that individual has. So the idea there is also to reduce to our best ability the access that people have to the number of folders and directories and drives, so that if a virus comes in through their user, it can't infiltrate the entire network, but only infiltrate the portions that it has access, that person has access to. So it is very important to make sure that people don't just have, you know, just wide open access to everything, but that they're limited, you know, to strictly what they need to do to get their job done.
Yeah. And it's also very helpful to Cynthia's point. If the least, having a user that has not access to too many things on the network, it helps us. We back up daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, to disk, tape, and replicate. So there's three ways that we could pull a restore. So if someone here on the call had access to something, we don't have to go clean up everywhere. We could say, this person has this role and this role has access to these things. And we're able to also, you know, report on that to make sure everything's clean, you know, other than just a file restore. So it's just another layer of security from a ransomware perspective, virus, or whatever new variant that's going to come out that's virtual. So if there's any questions, definitely let me know. But
do you want to address the last two there, Rob?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm all about the restore and ransomware. It's a hot topic for me. I'm sorry, everybody. Did I miss the last two? The information security procedures. That's something that is, it's definitely, so the IRP and the security procedures, it's those are the documents that we're continuing to develop. They touch on, you know, how certain things are configured, baseline configurations of some of our hardware, you know, our backup file restores process, how we fail over, how we fail back. All those things are the what we're putting on paper. We had it already, but again, in one template and continuing to just make it more standard. And we're also going to be reviewing these documents. I believe it's quarterly. I missed that note, Cynthia. But we'll be reviewing those documents as well throughout the year.
And on the intrusion detection, Rob did implement new firewalls last year. And in particular, the reason that this one is still considered in progress is only because the logs for the reporting components will actually be tied into the SIM when we bring that on board. And I mean, from our perspective, it's complete, but there's that extra step of being able to tie it into that SIM solution so that its logs for our firewalls and the intrusion detection can be incorporated with the SIM solution and also reported out on a regular basis. So in the report, we also included the mid to long-term strategic initiatives. And a lot of this is, you know, our software, our hardware that we purchased is about 4 years old now. So it was purchased and implemented in 2018 in our primary site, in 2019 at our co-location site. And we tend to use the hardware probably into the 6 to 8 year range. And by the 8th year, you really want to be off of it into something else. To make sure that you're not going to have any, you know, failures or that type of thing. So our plan is to not maintain that infrastructure the next go around. So the idea here is to work our way and set ourselves up for the ability to move from hardware infrastructure to a cloud-based infrastructure, which of course is on hardware that we no longer have purchased, but then we lease forever. So that's essentially the idea here. You would pay monthly for the use of hardware and capacity in somebody else's location rather than in your own location. So it's the primary environment, it's the colo environment, as well as the backup services that are associated with those two things. So those are the first and third item on the slide. The middle slide is to also enhance our payroll service provider. Essentially right now we are on a cloud-based platform for payroll. And the idea is to also integrate our benefit enrollment, which ties into payroll as well, to a platform. There might be an interim stage that we'll use. I think the difficulty has been looking at a platform that would follow the structure of the insurance that we have, which is an age band. So it's not just employee, employee plus spouse and plus children. It's I'm, you know, 25 or I'm 35 or I'm, you know, my spouse is 22 or, you know, and then my kids are 18 or my kids are 17 or 16 or 12. And so it's a little bit more complicated of a platform that we need. And there's not a lot of them out there that do that. We've done a little bit of research into some of them already. We have located some that do that. With the exit of Harvard Pilgrim, I'm not sure if we'll still stay in age bands going forward. The insurances that we've been quoted in the past 2 or 3 years do still have that type of structure associated with them. So it's really kind of a, you know, let's wait and see what's going to happen with that and then explore the available platforms and then go from there. Anyone have any questions on that? Because that's really IT in a nutshell. I do want to give an update quickly on other internal audit recommendations, but I want to make sure that everyone is, you know, we've, you know, checked all the boxes for you for internal audit updates as it relates to IT, as well as the strategic planning that we put together based on one of the Crow recommendations.
This is Daryl. I only have one question for Rob.
Yes.
Could you share with the group the specs for that microphone? I want to talk.
I'll definitely share with you.
I want to sound like that when I speak.
It's an XLR microphone that plugs into a very expensive mixer. But yes, I will share it with you.
Never mind.
All right. So just a very quick update. We have in play the other internal audits that were completed back in February. It was just a few months ago of this year. Barry Dunn reported out on their findings, recommendations related to accounting, which was completed in December. And as you know, arbitrage is still underway. You had requested that BLX come back after doing a follow-up of their findings that they had from last year. And they'll be back next month to report out on CHIFA related to, you know, an update. So for the accounting side, there was a credit card policy. They wanted a few changes related to allowable activity, spending limits, and things like that. We've had no complications or issues or troubles with our credit card policy or people's use of our credit cards for business purposes, but they would ask that we can update our policy to include specifications related to, you know, what can you use it for and what charges are allowable and, you know, how frequently can you use it and what your monthly credit limits are, which are already set on credit limits on the credit card or limits on certain expense categories as well and things like that. Timely bank account reconciliations. We are in the progress of being on time as of the end of April, beginning of May. All of the, as we mentioned before, we were going to turn these over into the hands of the position that we had created, the operations reporting analyst. And from that point, April, May of this year going forward, she is responsible for finishing up the review of the reconciliation. So the reconciliations are being done by the accountants, and then she is currently doing a review of those reconciliations. Review of the vendor master file. This is another thing that Julia is also performing. We've done one comparison of our data as it comes out of our new general ledger based accounting system. And the second quarterly compare is underway. Our capital asset policy, they'd asked for a definition of capital asset, you know, and they want it, basically they want it formally written, even though we have a definition of what a capital asset is. Also to perform an annual, they call it inventory, but we're gonna call it a fixed asset count because we don't, you know, have inventory, but that is also underway and for completion by June 30 as well. We have integrated our fixed assets into the general ledger, one of the general ledger modules of our multi-view accounting system so that we can track due depreciation. One of the things Joanne mentioned either last month or the month before, because we also changed our method of depreciation to just plain straight line associated with that implementation. one of the other things that they had there under the capital asset policy was the impact of the GASB 96, which essentially was related to right to use assets and the amortization over a lease period. That's actually something that we already do in some cases. Our newest auditor, Whittlesey, I believe Joanne was saying they're coming on site next week. We'll review where, you know, we already have it in place and whether or not there are some areas that we could take advantage of it and put it in place for those areas as well. In particular, I'll cite our use of Foundant. So Foundant is for the grants. That is a two-year right to use, I'll call it. And Joanne already amortizes that over the period of those 2 years. And in some cases, we do the same with other subscription-based information technology. So that may have already been implemented. We want to make sure that we implement it, you know, fully. So that should probably be covered. And the integration of our admin fee billing and review, they had asked that we integrate it with our online platforms if we can. They'd mentioned MultiView. For us, that's not the location for it, but the investment module software that we are implementing now for accounting is probably the best place to implement that. And that's going to be in a future phase. But they also asked that because we're using this grand developed Excel spreadsheet that Joe Wang created years ago to do this math, that it is reviewed before the invoices go out. And that was already put into place the last time we had to do billing, which was in mid-April for the CSU bond issues. And it will probably happen either tomorrow or next week for the rest of the billing that is going to be submitted for our clients and our administrative fees. Anyone have any questions on that? Because that really concludes both of the two initial agenda items for this meeting.
Any comments or questions, concerns?
No, my only comment really is that it's a very thorough review and I appreciate it, but I'm going to put it right out there that I'm not sure I completely understand all the technical sides of this and some of the terms, but I feel very confident between Rob and Cynthia and others that we're headed in the right direction. I mean, I appreciate all this, but I will have to confess that some of the technology material is a little bit beyond my knowledge base.
Yeah, I don't agree with you. I mean, I would agree with you, Peter. I would feel the same way. And I don't know if anybody on the committee has any expertise in the IT, especially in the security field, which is so important these days.
Yep.
If there isn't anybody on the committee, I don't know if that's something we need to think about for the future. It seems like we're depending on the outside experts that have been hired like Crow to do the at least the assessment.
Right.
I think the other thing too, everybody, is I think a lot of organizations are doing this more often. I also think I know we talked about doing this yearly. It's a lot to digest. It's also a lot to really, and Peter, I really appreciate your comments on how, you know, the comparison of, you know, what Crow did and what Barry Dunn did. It's a lot, even for us. The acronyms are constantly changing. The technology is ever evolving. But you know, I think it'll start to get some clarity. I just wanted you to know, even us technical people, we scratch our heads sometimes too, because it's a lot.
Yeah, and I do believe that if we report out annually, we also bring in our technology consultant to bring some of this information to you as well. You'll probably get a better comfort for where we are and what we're doing and our process forward.
I guess in my work here at the hospital, you know, members of our board who have expertise in the area, they're always the ones that kind of challenge us. Mm. And I'm not sure, is there anybody on this committee that can challenge the staff to make sure, you know, it is appropriate and it is where it should be. I mean, part of me is like, God, should we just outsource all of this to take the responsibility, you know, to somebody who that's all they do full time. They're experts and they know what's going on and they would know what state of the art current is on everything. And maybe that's been done before or before my time that was discussed. I don't know.
Susan, I think it's the right question. I mean, Rob, to a certain degree, stole my thunder, but did so with a much better voice again. but I mean, he hit the nail on the head. It is, I'm responsible in my shop, and I think, Susan, you have some of this as well, for, you know, cyber coverages and you know, our PCI work with credit cards and some other things on here. But it is so ever evolving that it's just... It is hard to keep up. And so I think to some degree, you do need that outside expertise. And I think it's worthy to come back to it on an annual basis and ask the question that you're asking, which is, how do we get smarter about this stuff and do we utilize a different approach?
Okay.
I had a question on another topic on the, phishing. I think you said you're going to do phishing tests monthly for staff.
No, we did do a phishing campaign last month for staff. And ultimately what happens is you're familiar with it, Susan, when you send out these artificial emails that have links that people will click on that you're hoping they won't click on because of the training that they previously had. And if they click on it, it basically takes them to a site that says you've been phished. And then it also assigns, training to them that they would, take in order to not fall prey to this type of thing again. Tokio Marine does offer phishing campaigns for us. And so we don't necessarily want to publish the period of time that we'll do the phishing, but we will periodically do phishing.
So is routine a good word? Routine audit phishing will happen?
Routine is probably a good word, but we want to make sure that people stay on their toes. And so working with Tokio Marine, they have a different set of, types of emails that they'll send, and we basically customize them to our environment. And Rob did all of this the last time. He chose the different types of campaigns that they had and then customized them to send them into our environment. But we'll work with Tokio Marine to do this and publish it for all of our users. And yes, it would be a routine thing going forward.
So how many people got phished in that test?
Not everyone. Some people opened it, and probably a good handful of people clicked on the links. So, and there's only, 22 of us here. So
yeah.
It gives you a good idea the number of people that are, doing a few little training modules afterwards.
Well,
but
I
Rob
guess
was good. He set one up that came from Kara that was related to our just past staff outing. And a lot of people were excited about the outing and clicked on the links. So
so I guess my next question is, the education is good. Is there a policy of what happens if somebody is a repeat failure? They fail twice, three times. Is there any sort of policy in HR, or should there be, that, if you have a repeat offender, even after education, what happens? Because one of these days they're going to click on a real phishing, not a phishing, a real, bad link.
Right. We do not have a policy in place related to that. It's something we can look into. I know you're in a hospital environment. You have a ton of HIPAA. You've got PII and things like that that you all maintain. That's probably more complex than the data that we maintain here. Not saying that we don't have, in some cases, PII. That is not something that we have, discussed internally as to whether or not there would be negative repercussions for constant failure with phishing.
And I think it's something, we would probably, if we felt that there were significant repeat offenders, maybe it would be a topic of discussion at that point. But at this point, we're feeling like it's not the direction we would need to go in.
Want to go.
Correct. But in the interest of time, I did want to ask Cynthia to move on to the independent auditor RFP scope.
Yes. So just quickly, the scope was included in the package. I hope you had the opportunity to review it. The timeline was laid out in the presentation. The purpose is also in the package, the objective is there, and the auditable areas are there as well. I don't know if anyone had any questions on that to address them, and just so that we can approve this for inclusion in the internal auditor RFP that will go out in a couple of weeks.
All right. So this is a request for an approval.
Yep. Anybody have any questions or comments?
Just a quick question, and I know we're pressed for time. Under CHESLA, we've got oversight of outside vendors. Why wouldn't we have that also under CHIFA?
Is essentially there under the public bond offerings, there are several more categories. The equipment loan program, bond documents, legal review, covenant analysis, corporate governance, legal compliance, policies and procedure documentation. There was a little bit more detail underneath each of those as well. And,
okay, so oversight outside vendors would be a subcategory of public bond offerings?
To a certain extent, and then we also have the SOC reviews that we do, which is kind of an oversight as well of those outside vendors, looking at the annual SOC reviews that they perform. So that's another component that is an internal function.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
But Peter, I'll look into that and make sure that if it warrants being included, we'll definitely add it in. If we don't think that we've got the bases covered, we'll definitely add something in there.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's under CHESL and it's under CSLF, so it just kind of begs the question, why wouldn't be a standalone item under CHIFA, but just...
Their primary operations are via outside vendors.
Okay.
Whereas just a subset of ours are that are vendor related with the SOC report support, but we'll definitely take a look at it.
Okay, if there aren't any other questions, is there a motion to approve the scope of internal audit services in the RFP as we just reviewed and was in your package?
Yep. Peter Lisi, I'll move it.
Angelini, a second.
Thank you. Any further comments, questions? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so that is approved. Any other business? No, our next meeting is scheduled for June 15th. And if there isn't any, I'll ask for a motion to adjourn this meeting.
So moved.
So Mike and Peter. All right, thank you everybody. I guess we'll see you in another minute.
Another minute or two. Thank you, Madam.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.